The Holy Gospel according to Luke, the 13th chapter.
Glory to you, O Lord.
At that very hour, some Pharisees came and said to Jesus, "Get away from here, for Herod wants to kill you." Jesus said to them, "Go and tell that fox for me, 'Listen, I am casting out demons and performing cures today and tomorrow, and on the third day I finish my work. Yet today, tomorrow, and the next day, I must be on my way, because it is impossible for a prophet to be killed outside of Jerusalem.' Jerusalem, Jerusalem, the city that kills the prophets and stones those who are sent to it. How often have I desired to gather your children together as a hen gathers her brood under her wings, and you were not willing. See, your house is left to you, and I tell you, you will not see me until the time comes when you say, 'Blessed is the one who comes in the name of the Lord.'" The Gospel of the Lord.
Praise you, O Christ.
Please be seated. There is a story that was told by a pastor in a presentation a couple years back at a pastor's conference that I went to. It was a story about a little country Lutheran church in South Dakota. I can't remember exactly where. But this church, like many other congregations, was proud of its heritage and its history. I can just picture it kind of on the plains of South Dakota, probably this little white Lutheran church. And the pastor who told this story reflected that everything about this congregation seemed healthy and strong when they accepted the offer and became the church's first call, new ordained pastor. They were really excited, of course, to start their ministry, and then came what this pastor nicknamed Altergate. The church altar, being close to 100 years old, was falling apart. To be honest, it really wasn't built in a way that was meant to be permanent. It was obviously made up of recycled wood from a farm somewhere, and it was crudely nailed together. One entire leg of it kept falling off and needed to be jerry-rigged to stay on while Holy Communion was being blessed. The altar just needed to go, the pastor thought. So this pastor started to put feelers out about getting a new altar and was met with surprisingly strong resistance, especially from one family. "My great-grandfather nailed these pieces of wood together, and it should be sturdy enough to last another 100 years, said one of the grandmothers of this family, and who was, by the way, highly involved in this small congregation and had great influence. Interestingly enough, another person in this family, one of the uncles, suggested that they reuse the wood from the current altar and build a new, stronger, more permanent altar from that. Well, this too was met with great resistance from the grandmother and several other church members. "The altar," she said, "is fine just as it is." So the pastor worked with this uncle, and to come up with a compromise, they actually figured out what farm the wood came from that original altar, and the barn was still standing. And so they took some of the same wood from the same barn that the wood from this original altar came from, and they built a new altar. Then their plan would be they would then put this new altar in the sanctuary and phase it in. by putting it close to the old altar and getting the congregation used to celebrating Holy Communion from it. So all of this takes place as planned, and the two altars sit up together in front of the sanctuary. And then one day the pastor walks into the sanctuary and discovers the addition of yet another table sitting in front of the two existing altars. Another member who had a wood shop and made furniture for a hobby heard that the congregation was looking into getting a new altar and decided to take 6 months and build a beautiful cherry table with carvings of Bible scenes and accents all around, and they had it be a surprise. "I wanted to surprise the church," this member told the pastor. "It's a gift." Though this table was by far, this new altar was by far the most beautiful table of the three, it created absolute chaos and divided the congregation into three groups. One group sided with the grandmother and the original altar. The other group thought that the new old barn wood altar was the right choice, and yet another group was taken with the newly carved table. And each group, of course, threatened to leave the church, to stop giving, if their altar wasn't used. The pastor, not really being a first-call pastor, not really dealing and having dealt with conflict like this before, tried to make peace with each of the groups, and it was decided to put wheels on each of these three altars, and to this day, a different altar has to be wheeled up and set in front of the sanctuary in order to satisfy each group. "It's absolutely ridiculous," said the pastor at this conference, who has since moved on to another congregation. He finally lamented that at the end, "I wish I had had the courage and knowledge to know that making peace just for peace's sake wasn't worth it in this case." One of the things on the surface that we like to do is chastise and characterize the Pharisees in Jesus' day as the bad guys, right? But our gospel story today lays out for us, I think, a more complicated case of their relationship with one another. The Pharisees, or as I have said many times in Bible study, the Pharisees, think of the Pharisees as the teachers, the professors of ancient Judaism. They were in some ways, in Jesus' time and place, the reformers of Judaism. They didn't believe that Judaism should be centered around one of the big temples in Jerusalem, right? Unlike the Sadducees or the priests of Jesus' day. If one lived, they said, according to the law of Moses, that's all you needed. No temple necessary. This, of course, is Jesus' line of teaching as well, except Jesus takes this reform further. One only needs to understand and live out the heart of the law of Moses in order to be part of God's work in the world. So what you have here in this story is not the Pharisees chastising Jesus over theological issues, but over Jesus rocking the boat too much. "Get away from here, for Herod wants to kill you," they say. "Sure, teach that stuff, but let's cool it off just a little bit. Let's make some peace first with the Sadducees and the Romans before we start reforming." Could it be that the mistake of the Pharisees was not so much that they disagreed with Jesus, so much as they were willing to advocate and defend three altars in the sanctuary. Jesus, unfortunately for them, and in some ways, unfortunately for us as well, is not about unity or peace for peace's sake. You will never find Jesus in the Bible having a beer with the Pharisees and the Sadducees and the Romans and advocating for, let's just get along, right? Jesus' mission in and to the world is to show the radical, unimaginable kind of love and justice that God has for creation. Period. That is what the single altar that Jesus advocates points to. The problem is that we get so enthralled and attached with the altar table that we forget and even reject the entire divinity that it is pointing to. Jerusalem, Jerusalem, the city that kills the prophets and stones those who are sent to it, how often have I desired to gather your children together as a hen gathers her brood under her wings, and you are not willing. These aren't words of anger or cursing from Jesus. These are words of lament. These are words of sadness. Jesus is lamenting the fact that the love of God he is preaching and showing is rejected again and again and again. There's this old theological notion that I think is very flawed, which states that Jesus, quote, had to die in order to take on our great wicked sin. God made Jesus die to consume our wickedness. There are many things that are super problematic, I think, with this church teaching that is still very much in the mainstream, and which I don't have time to get into this morning, but I think this out-of-date theological position is actually backwards when it comes to our story today. God didn't make Jesus die. We just fell in love with our own altar. Jesus keeps on with his ministry after this passage. He keeps on preaching and teaching. He keeps on rocking the boat and not settling for some half-baked compromise just to make peace. His life is uncompromisingly modeling God's love for all. Yet the powers that be in this time and his place, and dare I say, even in our time and place today, reject that love for all people and for all things. We would rather live to have our grandfather's altar in the sanctuary than to live to break bread with a stranger. We can see this, unfortunately, this week with our tragedy in New Zealand, this white supremacist mantra that's going on that took 50 lives. We would rather live to have our grandfather's altar in the sanctuary than live to break bread with the stranger, with the Muslim, with the Jew, with the Sikh, with anyone, as Jesus would do. I read someone's blog post summing up Jesus' words in this passage, which wrote, "To me," this blogger said, "to me, Jesus says, I'm going to keep loving even when you want to kill me. And it's killing me." Jesus laments our rejection. Yet the body of the risen Christ keep standing and pointing to the uncompromising good news. How many altars do we need in our sanctuary? What kinds of things does the congregation shy away from to just make peace and not rock the boat? Let us, then, this Lenten season, be challenged and be opened to this radical love. Let us not be afraid to trust one another and to go deeper. And may this church have the courage to be focused on the love of God and not get distracted by the altar. Amen.